Welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. Here, we speak with extraordinary games industry professionals and listen to their story to learn all about what they've built and who they are. GamesNet Berlin Europe is the international games industry initiative of MediaNet Berlin Brandenburg, the networking association for the media, creative and digital industries in Germany's capital region. My name is Simon Oler and I will be your host for this program. Today, we are speaking with Ingo Horn. Ingo is the Communications Director Europe for Wargaming, the chairman and founder of Let's Play for Charity, and since 2022, a jury member for DCP, the German Video Game Award. He was awarded the Federal Cross of Merit, that's in German the Bundesverdienstkreuz, for his charity efforts. Very impressive. Ingo has 27 years of experience in the games industry to draw from, so he has got some stories to tell. We talk about times in the games industry where a screenshot was taken with a photo camera pointed at a screen and sent as a DS slide via mail. Isn't that a fun process? We talk about bartering for better reviews in magazines. And we talk about companies being acquired and going bankrupt at the worst times and in the worst ways. Part of the story why Ingo turned a new leaf as a person and in his life and got into charity. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy our conversation with Ingo Horn. Hello and welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. I'm of course here with Florian and we have a guest today and his name is Ingo Horn. Hi Ingo.
Hi guys, thanks for having me here.
Great pleasure. I will introduce you. You tell me if I'm right.
I will interfere then.
Yeah, exactly. You are the communications director in Europe for Wargaming. You have founded two charities now, Gaming Aid and Let's Play for Charity. You are a jury member of the German Computer Game Prize or Award, DCP, Deutscher Computerspielpreis, since very recently, since this year, since 2022. You received a Bundesverdienstkreuz, here with the Germanisms, an Order of Merit, we looked it up, for your work in charity. And yeah, you're a bit of a long-standing guy in the video game industry. 27 years, worked on about 100 games, Dino Crisis, Baldur's Gate, MDK2, Master of Orion, blah, 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 all that.
10 minutes later.
Exactly. I was about to stop. So that's what I know about you when it comes to your bio. Am I right? Am I missing anything?
Of course, you're missing several stations and details up there, which are most likely not of any interest for the audience listening here. But of course, yeah, I just celebrated my 27th anniversary within our glorious industry. And everything you said is actually correct.
Very nice. Well, I'm sure you have many stories to tell. And yeah, please, Florian, take it away.
Yeah, and since you already said 27 years, you are the person with the longest standing career in games that we had on the podcast so far. And that also means that you know a lot of stories from days when I didn't even have a job yet, let alone working in games. So I wanted to start by asking you to tell us some stories of like how it was to be in the industry this early, how your job has evolved over time, how the industry has evolved over time, and yeah, so how things were then and how things are now for you.
How much time do we have for these? Because there are so many differentiations between those times back in the 90s and 2000s and right now. Because the games industry has had a big evolution over all those kind of years. I mean, if we are just talking about the segment of public relation, when I started with public relation in 97, we still had the time where we were sending out press releases by postal mail and adding the DR frames to this so that receiving editors could put this into the newspaper by utilizing this handcrafted screenshot, which was literally a screenshot, And we didn't have the pleasure to just send a bunch of megabytes by email and correcting things or adjusting things and stuff like that. So it was really, really a big issue to create screenshots back this time. And even when I started in the whole industry, which was in 1995 with the honored German newspaper or gaming magazine PowerPlay, we even for some of those platforms where we were not able to utilize screenshot tools on the PC and stuff, like Mega Drive or Super Nintendo or something like that, we even really needed to create a setup of cameras facing a monitor, facing a TV and so on, and really making literal screenshots with a normal photo camera, which then needed to be developed in the photo studio. And of course, you can tweak around a little bit with lighting, where the specialists who were able to make this real photographs were adjusting those kind of things. But that was really a complete different time as of today, where you most likely use any screenshot tool, any in-game tool, and create thousands of screenshots and select the best out of that. That was really something completely different in the early days. If we are talking about the appeal of the industry, of course, when I started in 95, 97, around this time, it was a complete different market because digital was not existing at this time. So you simply could only get games out there in the stores. If you're going to the Saturn Media Markt, Karstadt's, and whatever you have, just go there, buy it, and that's it. So you have a complete different marketing strategy. You have a complete different media strategy. Like radio was more important than it is as of today. TV was nearly close to be impossible to be featured in the TV. And so the whole appeal from and the whole job description, let's call it like this, for a PR manager was much different than it is as of today, because a communication manager of today is more like a jack of all trades, where you need to have contact to influencers on one side. You need to be capable to participate on podcasts like this one. You need to be able to react quite fast. If you see something online which is wrong, you can instantly contact the media, make it possible that they are correcting these kind of thing and stuff like that. So it's much, much more fast-paced. While in the old days, it was a lot smoother and relaxed than it is as of today in general.
Yeah, so one thing that stuck out to me there is the difference in how games media has changed over the time. I think that's one thing that I'm always contemplating. When I started working in games, I was a small office manager, basically, but doing that like next to my studies. But I quickly came into doing PR things for the indie studio I was working at. So obviously there was already social media, and that was around 2013. So I already noticed that the days were very different in contacting media, especially how the audience viewed, let's say, reviews compared to back in the day when I was reading them, especially as a player. So that was very interesting for me to hear. Obviously a change that is very profound in how communication has changed. Yeah. What's your opinion currently on the landscape, let's say, of the media mix? You mentioned influencers, so a lot of things have changed, but how important do you see, let's say, the media magazines in the whole mix, like the publications in the whole mix of your repertoire?
You mean the print media or?
Print, yes. But even then, there was also a change from going from print to those magazines going to digital versions as well. But yeah, in general, written reviews of games compared to a lot of more video content, influencer content, and how much. What I'm always asking myself is like, how important is it to have the classic PR, like talking to media, the press specifically, versus the influencers, for example?
I would say in today's time, we do no longer have this traditional PR manager, which was classically only there to talk to media partners, show games on game shows like E3, ECTS, or Games Convention, for example, back in those times. Today, as I said, it's more like you are a jack of all trades. And that's, for example, why my job description is communication director and not PR director, as an example. As literally in the most of the cases, when you're today as a responsible person for communication, no matter if you're junior, regular, senior director or whatsoever, you really rely on your own spirit, on your own trustworthy words, your how you align with your games. And if you're good in this kind of things, you can talk to almost anybody, no matter if it's an influencer who's really deep into the game, no matter if it is an editor of a daily newspaper who don't even know anything about games and think this is the evil thingy or the new whatsoever, versus a very capable community member which is visiting you during Gamescom and having a talk with you and most likely know the game even much better than you do. If you have the capability and could align to your game and know all the factors, you really need to be the jack of all trades in general. Of course, for the traditional PR duties like crafting a proper press release, crafting a main message, crafting a PR plan and develop a media strategy in general, that of course helps if you have really the strength and the experience in those kind of branches. But in general, in today's time, you must be much more like a universalist than a dedicated PR manager, which only has his handcraft and is flexible potentially to talk about Snickers on one side and the latest Resident Evil game on one side, on the other side, or some hardware. In general, you need to be flexible, but the more you are aware of what you're talking about, the more credible it goes. And that's really the thing for 2022 in general, that credibility is everything. And this credibility is, of course, something which influencers in general are extremely talented in building up a credibility of their own, that they really are the universal knowledge database for this particular game or for that particular game. That is why the audience is listening and watching their videos. And they are most likely willing to trust these kind of influencers for this or for that particular game. And that's a difference compared to the media, which are basically covering everything from A to Z and have, of course, individual editors who are experienced in RPG and ventures and strategy and so on. But in general, they're featuring every small to big games because that's their purpose. That's their daily handcraft. That's their daily duty. And therefore, they are more universalists than, for example, influencers who dedicatedly do nothing more than GTA RPG on Twitch, or like Gronkh, one of our most famous German ones, who was really getting bigger and bigger due to Minecraft, as an example. Mm-hmm. That's where his whole audience came from. Those were Minecraft fans, and they liked him, and successively he shifted over as well to adventures and stuff like that. And this is the main purpose of his success, that he was credible in this particular way, beside being a very sympathetic person, a very go-to guy, has a nice voice to listen to as well. But if he would do each day some other game and just scratch on the surface of a game, nobody would really be up to subscribing to his channel and stuff like that. And that's basically the main difference from the past to today, because in the past you had basically, when I was an editor at PowerPlay, each month there were 5 to 10 games thrown on your table. Mm-hmm. You need to play them all, you need to write about them, and then the next month the next 10 games were coming and so on. And if you look at some of our magazines which are still existing and look at their online appearance, there you can see that they are already concentrating potentially on hype topics when a new AAA game is released, that every single news about this hype game will be discussed. Like, I remember the discussion about Red Dead Redemption, where the graphical feature of the balls of the horses was really in news, where everybody was writing about, where you normally might be saying, okay, the newsworthy of that is not given, but it clicks really, really well.
Yeah.
And so there you can see that online is a little bit different, like the print issue, which most likely will not write a 3-page article about the size.
I mean, maybe there's a in magazines, I think they are very specialized. So maybe there's a magazine that goes specifically only about that topic as well.
I doubt it, honestly. if there's a market for that, maybe you should change your job and should really start this kind of media. And I'm more than willing to hear if that is a success to get some royalties from you then.
So one thing that I wanted to talk about in this instance as well is then specifically the point that I haven't discussed this with many people, or I haven't heard that from many people. I think overall, I feel like the value has been going down a little bit in at least the indie community, but the meta score of a game, like that used to be something, at least from my understanding, and what we also were looking for, obviously, contacting the press and hoping for a very good meta score. And I think from what I've heard from bigger companies, that's why I'm asking you this question, is that there's still a lot of cloud or even things like payment or whatever. You don't have to go into like how it is for you, but in general, like understanding the industry, like is that still a valued point, like what Metascore your game receives?
You need to separate this a little bit because Metascore, or especially Metacritic, which is the main leader for this kind of purpose, is a US website which is tracking from different magazines all over the world the average and calculating a Metacritic score out of that, is a very highly discussed magazine, especially within PR managers. Mm-hmm. But it is true that some, especially development teams, which are owned privately and are doing a work for hire, for example, and are signed by publishers, might be including in their contracts that if the game is reaching a Metacritic score of, let's say, 90 plus, then they get an extra payment for this kind of thing as a proof of quality and stuff mm-hmm. like that. On the other hand, of course, that leads to the fact that the pressure on PR managers like me are even bigger, because then it is not that you just accept the imagination or the expectation from the media, which is saying, okay, it's an 89%. And then you're trying to call them and argue and try to bargain a little bit, like on a bazaar, mm-hmm. To prove the opposite person that it might be worth considering a 90%. That is something which, at least me personally, I never liked, because that's not about the game. That's more about just having this kind of 1% more or less.
A very quick question, if I may. You didn't like it, but did you do that? I just had this, how do scores come about? Like, as a PR manager, did you have to bargain sometimes, or was that a common thing that people, like, you know?
I wouldn't say that this is a common thing, but I would say that this, of course, is one of our duties as well, to check, at least, let's say hypothetically, Florian, you are checking out our latest game and you are rating it 78%. Mm-hmm. 78% in today's time really is close to be a rubbish game in the view of many audiences out there. Many readers do not read articles or like to buy games which are under this 80% barrier, if you have this, or 5 stars or whatsoever. And of course, there's a high motivation to overcome this 78 and redo it to an 80%. And of course, I, as a responsible PR manager, would grab the phone or grab the Skype or whatsoever I'm talking to you, and trying to get why you have decided like this. If there are some things which disturb you, where you potentially had errors, where some tech issue have been, where some, let's say, red flags have been with you because it's a beta version or something like that. So I could potentially argue that this red flag, which you potentially figured out, is something which we are aware of, and in the final version, it will be out. And we can prove this after sending.
And you would know the score before release, right? That would be like a pre-release type conversation. Like the Florian would have informed you.
It really differs. For people who have long-lasting relationship to really big medias, there's always the opportunity before the article comes out to hear at least a tendency. And if you talk about tendencies, let's say you say, it's a 70, 80 something, this is something which most likely will be discussed, because you as an editor are trying to reach out to me as well and asking, hey, do you think this will change or that will change? Because in the end, you rely on my word. And there we already closing the circle about credibility. Because if I'm telling bullshit and saying to you, yes, yes, of course, everything will be out in the final version and we're going to have this glorious final game, you might be trusting me for the first time. But if this is happening two, three, four, five times and we see each other in the next game and the game after, then you probably won't trust me anymore. So therefore, PR people always need to be extremely careful with promises. If they are not aware that these are 100% guaranteed. So do not talk the anything like we say the clouds in the sky. And for real, you know, this feature will never make it into the game because it's more or less like a wishful thinking and so on. But of course, in my career, I already had the case that, for example, I was so enthusiastic about talking, especially when we are starting a first introduction of a game, like a preview on E3 or on Gamescom behind closed doors, that sometimes you tell features where then the director or the producer is talking to you when you're having your dinner with you. You know, Ingo, that feature what you were explaining there, we just need to add this now to the game. It's cool, but it will cost us €200,000 to implement this feature. That happens, or could happen at least. It happened only once for me in my lifetime when I was working for a development studio directly and was deeply involved in all this kind of thing. And I thought that I have heard about this feature, that if there is fog on the floor and it was a first-person shooter and the player character is walking through this floor with fog, then this fog would divide so you can follow the tracks of somebody who you're chasing, for example. Mm-hmm. Very cool thing back in it was in 2003, I think it was, yeah.
What game was this?
Which was Never Seeing Daylight. It was called They. It was called The Y Project from Vestka Interactive back in this time. But sadly, the developer went insolvency, claimed insolvency before the game was released. But we were already in the early stages of showing the first beta version to media globally. And during one of these presentations, there was this question of a journalist. Oh, can you trace in the multiplayer if somebody else was walking through this room and you can see this from the fork on the floor? And they said, yeah, that would be absolutely awesome if this would be visible. And I was more or less catching this as a God-given feature. And then they tried to implement it, by the way. But yeah. It never happened for reality.
And that's why they went broke, right?
Yeah.
Because you said it.
That was the reason. Guys, to say the insolvency of Vestka Interactive is an absolute story of itself, because it was a chain reaction. Vestka Interactive was 60% bought by Brainpool back in this time, a German TV production company. Brainpool was bought by Viva, a music channel in Germany, and Viva was bought by Time Warner, AOL back in this time. And because the buyer of the buyer of the buyer of the buyer just decided that they don't need a production development company in Germany, and from 1 month to the other, they just wrote us to zero, which means we couldn't pay anything anymore. And then this was in a press release inside, and through a press release, our management and us as employees were informed that, that was it.
Wow.
they cut you every funding. And then we tried, of course, with an insolvency manager to still survive and find some investors and stuff like that. But after three more months, then this story was told and Vestka Interactive was wiped from this landscape in German development.
Wow, that sucks. That's crazy, right? Isn't it weird? Like, as a kid, I always thought, you know, these things, they everything the adults do, you know, is like properly thought out. I remember when Twitch was about to be bought by Amazon, but there was a big thing that it was going to be bought by Google just before, like in the press, like a speculation. That was so surreal for me as a 22-year-old to witness that there's press about my work, and then you know, our leadership kind of said, we can't say anything about it, and you can't say anything about it. So we can't tell you exactly what's going on, and you can't talk to anybody else. And of course, you know, the emails were going, "What? You're getting bought by Google? What's going on? Blah blah blah." And I was just like, so strange, you know, you're left in the dark.
Yeah, of course. Just imagine how it was for Activision now being bought by Microsoft, or at least waiting for the final green light on this.
How was it? Or like, what should I imagine, or what should we imagine?
I could only imagine. I mean, there are only a few people who were aware of that in the higher ranks, but how hard it is as well to keep this under the table as long as until the official release is been, because I mean, Activision Blizzard is at the stocks, and Google, of course, as well, and Microsoft as well, and others. This is really affecting the stock exchange massively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and the more people know about that, the more likely is it that there is going to be a leak. And that's literally the same as well for new productions. I mean, it's no secret. Wargaming is a big company, for example, and it's quite obvious that we are not resting our heads only on the success of World of Tanks and World of Warships and the other games over the years, that we have some things in development which might be unveiled this year, next year, or in 3 years or something like that. But of course, we are not able to talk about that. And sometimes it's harder to resist, or even when we are talking loosely, like here, the danger is, of course, the more people know about that somebody after the fifth beer or something is going to be talkative during Gamescom or something.
Yeah, that's... I was thinking while you were talking that, oh man, we need an episode where somebody is like very well-versed in like all these buyouts and acquisitions and stuff. This is a PR episode, but yeah, I guess this is now also an acquisition episode, so... Yeah, that's a super interesting topic, especially since you mentioned we are recording this at a time where Activision Blizzard is about to be bought by Microsoft, pending decisions. But yeah, this is something that a part of the industry that is super interesting to me. And obviously, I mean, this has started to become... a huge topic over the last years as well. We see a huge wave of bigger companies buying smaller companies. I mean, that has always been there, but I feel like the volume of these acquisitions has grown immensely over the last years. Talking about many, especially also Berlin companies over the last years being bought, from different international companies. What's your opinion in general about where the industry is going in terms of this acquisition, I would say even a frenzy? Like, what is the goal? Where are we heading with this? Like, the huge corporations buying up everything? Will there be indie developers left? What's going on there?
I think it's a quite interesting time where we are currently living in, because the gaming industry is shaping into something new, where especially due to this Game Pass things from Microsoft and Sony most likely investigating on this and tailoring something together which is the same. Then we have on the other side the Epic Store, the Steam Store, and something like that. And these are the powerhouses as of now. While if you compare it to the 90s, where we had in Germany some big publishing houses like Soft Gold or Bumico, which were basically companies who had great, great contacts to the real stores out there and can guarantee to ship 40, 50,000 copies to the Karstadts of spread over whole Germany. So these were the ones who were signing then publishing contracts with various developers. And then successively, there were some new coming up, some others went down because they made wrong decisions or were not able to sign the ones because it was able to really barter with them what kind of royalty fee you get as a developer and stuff like that. And then successively, it was more or less that international publishers were playing the major role in the 2000s and early 2010s. Where we all know that Ubisoft, Activision, Electronic Arts, THQ, and all these kind of publishers were basically dividing the cake of released games under them, between them. And right now it looks like that's something like the really big powerhouses like Tencent, like Microsoft, like Sony, Amazon as well. We don't know about Netflix, if they're engaging as well. That there might be that the future of gaming lies in the hand of those service distributing service companies. Because basically, and that is where gaming has always been competing with completely other industries like books or movies or VHS cassettes at home and later on DVDs. And right now it's streaming. We are all competing about the time some retailer out there, some customer has.
And normally, time and attention, huh?
Time and attention. And let's be honest, most of us, we're doing our job. Let's say a stereotype 9-to-5 job, then you have family, you have kids, so most likely you won't be able to do your private time before 8 or 9 o'clock or something like that. Maybe you are still a member of a football club and need to go to training and stuff like that. So basically, you have something like 1 to 2 hours of spare time each day, which as a hobbyist, you would like to spend into gaming and stuff. And in today's time, we are living in a fast-paced time. In the cities, you have much more distraction. If you're living on the countryside like I am, you don't have this many alternative opportunities. Not talking about pandemic where everything is closed. But therefore, it is, of course, a big advantage if you're somebody like Microsoft and you're having this Game Pass, which probably several million of people already subscribe to. And the likeliness, if you're selling your game rights and publishing rights to Microsoft, or even buying the whole company to Microsoft, is that you get more attention by the owners of the Game Pass. The question is, of course, how many people who own a Game Pass will play my particular game because it needs to fit their own imaginations and preferences versus watching a Netflix episode or watching something on Amazon Prime or watching the latest soccer game in whatever sports provider you have been subscribing to. But in the end, it's a question of how much money you are spending for what kind of distraction. Let's say in general, and that changed a little bit because gaming gaming in the past was more like, do you have the money to buy a game? Okay, mm-hmm. You go to a store, you buy it, and then there is no need to rush, so you can play it for the next half a year. Because I, as a teenager, did not have so much money, so yeah. I most likely would be able to buy 2 or 3 games all over the year, and I was concentrating on those. While others, of course, who have more money, they were consuming this like whatsoever. But in today's time, with Steam sales here and free Sony game there, free Game Pass there, it's a really completely different time. For an end consumer, it's the perfect time because you can consume much, much more than you could priorly do. Okay, let's not talk about black copies and leeching something from the internet.
Actually, that would have been something that I wanted to bring up, but finish your point.
Yeah. So therefore, it's a very, very good time actually for consumers as of now, but it's a very dangerous time as well, as smaller titles might be buried under. Mm-hmm. And you already mentioned the indie segment, for example, which are already a lot of notice, and there's a big community out there which is trying out games as well, as they're sometimes for free or for a tenner being able to buy. But of course, there is the threat. If I have my FIFA, my Call of Duty, my World of Tanks, and how much more should I play, especially when I have an MMO or something like that, it's very much time consuming. And therefore, why should I pay attention? What latest releases are there, which I probably have not heard of?
Yeah.
So the amount of games is bigger, so the selection is wider, but the threat of being thrown under the bus is much higher than it has been in the past.
Yeah. So this acquisition strategy, to me, as you mentioned, this the competition for somebody's attention and time, I think you can notice this when the bigger platforms, like the service providers, are actually accumulating all these brands, all these different IPs to build their own content universe that you, in their mind, probably shouldn't even leave. So obviously, if you are Netflix, and we've seen this with some acquisitions on their side, I think even today there was a new mobile thing announced, if I did read that right. So of course, it helps if basically you have one subscription to a service that, even if you are Netflix, and a few years back, you would divide your time between watching a series or playing a game from a different service. If you then can accumulate that into one service, then you're still within that universe. So they don't care if you're playing a game or watching a movie.
I think with Netflix, it's very much dedicated as well to the fact that on paper they are worth so many billions as of now, but the reality is that they are losing money because all the production costs for their AAA movies with The Rock and Leonardo DiCaprio and whatsoever are costing a fortune. But based on paper, they are growing and they're becoming more and more valuable. And by that, simply mass, they are able to buy as well others and to do mergers or whatsoever. But literally for them, it's most interesting to get new subscribers, being aware to more people.
Yeah.
And within this streaming platform themselves of streaming series and movies, I think they are already at a very fiscal point where it's harder to get something new. It's pretty much the same like for us free-to-play companies. We have our audience, we have our 200 million registered players, but it's of course harder from month to month to reach new audience mm-hmm. and to recruit new potential players to our games. And therefore, over the years, we were looking for different opportunities to collaborate with somebody. Like, for example, we have collaborated with Sabaton. We have been collaborating with Offspring and bands like this, which of course give us the opportunity. We implement them into our game. We implement the music. We are creating a music video together with them and stuff like that. And by that, we can reach a complete different audience, the audience of metal fans, for example. We have been sponsors of Wacken Festival in Germany, the biggest metal nice. Festival. And these, of course, are all tries and considerations how we can reach somebody who is potentially interested in a tanks and in a ships game, as an example. And it's pretty obvious that this is more a male-dominant audience. We have over 90% of our players are male, which is no surprise because of tanks and ships and stuff like that. And therefore, we are going to typical men-owned branches and stuff like that. And that's what pretty much every acquisition as well is a part of. Can this snack, which I would like to acquire, enlarge my audience, my community, and could I enlarge my reach by that? Because this is simply a very, very major point, especially for somebody like Netflix or Apple Pay or Amazon Games and stuff like that. To reach more audience, the more audience you have, most likely more subscriptions you get. Make your calculations. Mm-hmm.
I just have a quick comment. I have to say that I had this strong feeling while you told about this kind of the attention economy. I was like, yeah, man, you know, back in the day, right? Buying 3 games a year, or, you know, I remember sitting on, you know, Zelda Link's Awakening on the Game Boy for months, you know, because I couldn't solve it. And it, just the longevity of a game. And now there's so much, you know, it's impossible to play everything or something. It's like you said, it's like great for the consumer, but while you were talking, I was like, oh my god, you know, I'm overwhelmed. If, you know, if I would feel pressed for choosing games to play, almost impossible now, right?
So but on the other hand, the pile of shame is growing.
Yes.
yeah that's kind of what I mean. Yeah, this kind of to-do list. I mean, I don't feel it that strongly personally, really, but I can only imagine, you know, the well, both the fun that consumers are having now and also the kind of stress, you know, if you feel like you want to catch every good game, there are a lot, especially if you count indies, Steam and everything. So what a time, man. Kind of tripped me out right now. I was like, wow, there's so much. I just saw it in front of my eyes. So yeah. Yeah, thanks for that turn. That was so interesting and
flashback to
see. Yeah, yeah.
Of course. But that's the most interesting part on our games industry, that it's consistently evolving, and sometimes there are some major leaps. Something like really when you're playing Civilization and you reach a new era and something like that. And it almost feels like this within our games industries, that even after 27 years within, it never gets boring and you never get used to the things because you need to evolve as well. Otherwise, you're left behind.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we had some topics prepared, of course, and this derailed quite a bit. And it's interesting because I would like to go in that direction a lot more. But what we really wanted to talk about with you today is something that makes you special and that we invited you on this show specifically for, which is your charity work. That's a segue, and we're going into a completely different topic. So as we mentioned in the beginning, you are or were involved in already two charities, one of which you're still the head of. And you told us once that this is your hobby, but somebody doing this as a hobby, you seem very successful at it. So yeah, let's talk a bit about your charity work.
Yeah, more than a pleasure. Since 2013, where I need to go a little bit 1 year in advance, I had the, well, not pleasure, I had the issue that in my personal environment, meaning connected to many media and stuff like that, it happened that from two journalists, they have had a very hard time because of some of their relatives went severely sick. And what is the normal reaction of everybody of ours when meeting the people, clapping on their shoulders and saying, it will be okay, it will be better, and everything is going to be all right. And that's literally it, what most people do. And I was sick and tired of all this kind of optimism, which on one side is easy to understand, to show empathy to the people, but on the other side, you do not really relate for real what they are going through. And in these two particular cases, I was considering there needs to be an opportunity to do more. There should be something which I or we as an industry, we are such a successful industry, should be able to do for the people who don't have such a bright time currently. And so I was investigating there about different opportunities, what can be realized, what cannot be realized. And I was completely blunt on this case and didn't know anything. And but I was quite impatient on that and was thinking of, okay, like this, and this. And in the end, it turned out that I was hosting a panel at Quo Vadis in 2012 in Berlin. And that was happening in the ICC back in this time at the Alexanderplatz. And I was basically just offering a talk about charity in gaming. Where does this lead to? And I was considering, okay, who should be interested in this? And it turned out that the room was too small because over 60 people were listening there. And I was basically telling that I investigated on this, investigated on that, and that I would like to form a German Verein, so a non-profit entity here in Germany. And for that, there are regulations in Germany that you need to have 7 founding fathers or founding members in general. And if somebody would be willing or interested, so we can talk about this. And there were instantly 2, 3, 4, 5 people who directly at this event said to me, Ingo, you can count on me. No matter what you are planning, call me in. And some months later, because we needed 7 overall, we had our 7 founding members. And I needed to arrange something with a lawyer, because you need to do a complete list of official things. In German, it's Satzung. Sorry, not aware of the English word for that.
Like a manifest of sorts.
So there are obligations as well, things you need to pay attention, because otherwise everybody could create this kind of legal entity. And then we started at the 1st of July in 2013 with Gaming Aid as a e.V., eingetragener Verein, which is a public jurisdiction thing in Germany, like soccer clubs, tennis clubs, everything like that. And we just started the business, which was harder than imagined, because you need to open a bank account, and the bank account could only be opened if you have a running thing. And if you don't have a running thing, you couldn't open a bank account. So it was a hack N thingy. But after some complicated thingies, we have been able to overcome these kind of things, and we started our initial work back this time. After 2 years, we had the opportunity to get the agreement from the German finance system that we are accepted as a non-profit organization, which of course changed the appeal for Gaming Aid themselves, because then we are able to collect as well donations, which the donor could put for his taxes. So there is as well a motivation for companies and for private people to give us money, as they can claim this in their annual tax declaration to get some percentages back. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, we, when collecting these kind of things, we do not need to pay taxes on this, because normally, of course, income tax and stuff like that occur. And that was of course, a major blessing for us as a association, club, whatsoever you call it. But in the end, that was the starting shoot for us to help people in need. And successively, we enlarged it to help, for example, refugees. At this time, 2015, if you remember, was it a big topic in Germany about refugees entering the European Union and coming to Germany. So we supported them collecting, I think, 5 tons of clothing for refugees, for example, and stuff like that. And it was successively more and more successful. More and more companies were working closer together with us. And at that time, I went to some private issues myself. And at some given time in 2016, I had to decide that I need to retreat from the chairman and driving force for Gaming Aid with very, very hard, big heart hurt. And the thing is, if you're doing charity, you have so many meetings or occasions where you meet some people which you probably would have never met without this. Like I have been on a children cancer station, on an oncology in Cologne at the university, donating them some Wii's, some Nintendo Wii, to distract their time when they have their examinations and their curings and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I met several of those kids. All of them, of course, with bowed heads, no hair. Some of them severely close to really to die. They were aware that they are going to die. Mm. And there were so much joy and so much thankfulness from there, so grateful that we at least try to limit what they are suffering and bringing some joy to them. And there was nothing, no really negativeness, sadness or something like that, although they knew in some cases what destiny awaits them, which was extremely, I do not know how to translate this emotion, what occurred and raised in me, that this really, really was a huge impressive thing for me, where I'm extremely thankful for those young people, young boys and girls, who were even more grown up than I am because of facing their destiny. And as I said, due to my private situation, I stepped back from the chairman job and I gave it to some very good hands of close friends of mine who were already engaged into Gaming Aid as well. But I learned inside half a year that I'm missing something severely. It's really like something you need to stop playing squash because your Achilles is broken or something like that. And after getting well and having a stable foot again, then you would like to return to the squash court. And it was really something like that. And but I sensed that I would like to do something different than to just maintain an already running association like Gaming Aid was. And my successors were already doing a really good job. And of course, I do not want to say, okay, hey, I'm back now. Please step back again. So I was considering really something like something different. And so the idea of how to use and work with the newly phenomena back in these times, streaming, influencers, YouTube and Twitch, which was in 2016-17, not that common and popular like it is as of now. And basically that was the idea where Let's Play for Charity was born, which was really my own private idea, and without wasting so much time, learning from Gaming Aid founding that there are a lot of hurdles and a lot of obstacles to fulfill, that I said, well, I just make a private channel and try my luck with a Twitch and a YouTube channel where not I am the streamer, but where befriended other streamers could be as guest streamers. So we can offer, let's say, a universal program, just like a TV station, where something is happening all the time. That would be my dream at one time, and so on. And from that onwards, it was evolving more to a factor that, hey, Ingo, it's a little bit hard to build up a channel, but why don't you do something like an event on an event? Meaning there were like roleplay convention, EGX, Gamescom, events like this, where you make a stage, and on this stage you do some charity program. We are streaming this with the help of Twitch. We go to the main page and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you're basically doing some entertainment for the people out there visiting actually this event, and for those who cannot visit and watch it via your stream, basically. And that turned out that this was really hitting bullseye. So with some sponsors and helping hands and helping money, we have been able to build booths, for example, at the roleplay convention, where we had the pleasure then to invite as well special guests who have been the VIPs at those RPCs. So we had actors from Game of Thrones, from Star Wars, from Stranger Things, and so on stage, and we're just talking to them. Inviting developers like the Phenomedia guys, talking about their newest game Elex and stuff like that. And that was already showing a lot of interest from the industry that they're supporting this, and on the other side getting some attention from the audience out there. And so basically the roleplay convention then was the start of something like we are now doing more and more often, to participate on events, on real shows, where we are making a charity program, which is interesting for the audience at place, meaning the visitors of RPC, EGX, and so on. And on the other side, for those who cannot make it up there. And because that was, let's be open and honest with that, that was a little bit more we can do as a hobbyist, because you need to take into account building the booth, building up the techniques, having Cutter up there, cameraman, and stuff like that. So we were collaborating with professional companies, event companies for this. And of course, for them, it was not like something they do pro bono for no money and for the good thing. And that costs some money, and therefore we needed to have some partners and sponsors and something like that. Something like the big charity annual events like Friendly Fire or Loot für die Welt are normally doing. But it was still a private thing back in this time. It was my own channel, my private engagement. And I was collaborating with the association, which was already profiting and introduced to me in my times of Gaming Aid. It was Stiftung für die Hilfe im Kampf gegen den Krebs, so an entity which is taking care of cancer patients.
I think I remember, by the way, I think we were in touch, right? I was still at Twitch when you founded that, and I think...
Yeah, sure. You never answered my emails. That's true.
Yeah.
Same experience for me. He never answered any emails.
Yeah, that's what the people know about me. Man, yeah.
Exactly.
You think these things wouldn't come back at you, right? And then, you know, I could have just not said this also, but here we are.
No, just joking. But yeah, that was actually our first personal connection back in this time. But due to that, we were collecting money, not for Let's Play for Charity back in this time, because then I would have need to pay taxes for that. That's something which many, many streamers out there forget if they are saying, I'm doing this weekend a charity stream and I'm donating to the local animal shelter and something like that. Then they are collecting 500 euro and in the end, only 250 of those euros can be donated because the other 250 are need to pay by taxes. And several people are forgetting about this. And this was then the spot where we decided, okay, we need to go literally the same way like back in this time with Gaming Aid to form an association. And because we already had so many people were supporting us, streamers and event agencies and stuff like that, so it was no issue to find enough people who were saying, okay, we go to the next step and are forming now really an association. And due to some changes in German law, it was a lot easier to already get registered, not only as an association, but as well as a non-profit organization that we can already collect donations and forward them elsewhere without paying taxes. So this is where we stand as of now, since mid-April last year, that we have a non-profit organization, letsplayforcharity.com, where the Let's Play for is the number for charity.com, where literally everybody can be a member. So you can apply for a membership. You can try to get in touch with us if you are a streamer and would like to do something for a good thing. No matter if you would like to organize a charity stream of your own and you don't want to get into this trap with the taxes and would like to do it right, then we are supporting those people who would like to do this. Or like in currently we are preparing two events during the summer where we are exactly doing this with a charity stage for real happening event. Let's keep fingers crossed with the pandemic situation, of course. And successively enlarging our association to grow and to be more and more professional and potentially going even international.
Okay, so that's quite a charity history. And it seems like logical steps, you know, building something from scratch with all the struggles and then moving to building something yourself and also building a platform that, if I heard you right, maybe you can repeat kind of like your CTA that you kind of set in the end. So if somebody is listening to this who, you know, wants to be part of a charity, how exactly can somebody be part of or contribute to Let's Play for Charity, just so that's clear? Because that's what I heard in the end, that it's really a platform, you know, for many people to participate as well.
If we take only the streaming platform, meaning our channel LP for Charity on Twitch or our YouTube channel as an example, therefore this is absolutely right. So anybody can contribute some content for that, and we will be putting this up on our platform on Twitch. That means if you, Simon, would like to now do some streaming and you don't do it for the money, but you just do it for the fun, you can talk to us. We give you a guest stream key for our channel and you can be there with your own layout whatsoever, same like you're doing, would be doing for your channel, and you're just streaming content then on our channel, for example. That is that each day there could be somebody else. Just look for our timeline. On Friday, we have Minecraft for Charity. On Wednesday, we have video podcast guys doing there. On Monday, then we have now Simon, who will always play some cool games, and so on and so on. And the long-term goal is literally that we will have something like a TV channel where after Sesame Street, there is going to be a cartoon. After the cartoon, there is some youth-friendly content, and in the evening we show some movies with hardcore horror and action and stuff like that in terms of gaming. So this can be flexible and everybody can stream anything, which could mean we start with some Pokemon game, afterwards there is the new Harry Potter game, and in the evening there is some Borderlands, and in the night somebody is playing Resident Evil. That would be the dream, let's call it like this, that we have 20-30 YouTubers and streamers who are giving the stick to each other after and after, and the audience is staying because they would like to see what comes next, and they're subscribing and following us because they like the variety we are offering. That's basically the dream. The reality, of course, is that we are started a few months ago, and so far we have not that many streamers who are participating regularly. because time as well, especially for those who are making a living out of Twitch streaming, of course, they would like to prefer to stream on their own channels and keep with their audience. That is why the other opportunity to work with us would be to connect and say, hey, Ingo, if you're doing something on Gamescom, on RPC, on EGX, wherever, whatever comes, let me know, because I would be willing to come there live on stage and visit you on the couch, talk to each other, contribute to the channel, and play a little bit for you while we are, for example, in Cologne or in Salzburg or wheresoever. And by that, reaching not only our audience, but as well the audience of Influencer X, who is, of course, then streaming as well for his own platform while being guest with us. So we can stream it literally on two channels, more or less, something like that. That is the second thing. And the third thing is more for those who are shy or not this front woman, front man like, where I would like to be in the back. You can just subscribe to our association and be a member, which we have different cost models and membership models for small pockets or for bigger pockets. Or you can even apply with your company and be part of Let's Play for Charity as a company and as a so-called heuristic person. So that means that you are just a part of the club, just like you are part of a soccer club and so on. You can vote for the next selection of next chairman. You can vote if we are making votes on a frequent basis within our membership. What do you think about this, to enhance this, to change that? That this is not the universal decision by Ingo himself anymore, because we are a democratic association, and therefore the number of members come together, decide with a main vote. And if they decide we go left, then we go left. And if they decide we go right, then we go right, no matter nevertheless what I would like to do. And so overall, everybody can participate and help. And maybe there's a fourth way for those who don't see, okay, I do not want to engage in an association like this, but who have some spare money maybe left over. So they could potentially donate something here or raise some money over there, as we have different opportunities to donate money, no matter if it's via PayPal, via Streamlabs, direct wiring to our account, or via Better Place, for example. You can find all those kind of donations opportunity directly on our website. So call to action, everybody listening here, would be great if you can throw some euro or 10 into the virtual hat, so we can do something good with this. But of course, we are extremely happy if we find new partners, new people who would like to do something with us. Maybe organizers of events who did not know about us are watching what we have been doing so far. As you said, we won the Heart of Gaming Award last year with our Gamescom charity stream for the victims of the floodings in North Rhine-Westphalia. And everything is possible. We talk to everybody and we brainstorm together, and one word comes to the other, and then we find some cool opportunities. And that's really like the personalization of Ingo. He's a really impatient guy who just would like to do something and not talk to people who are just talking. Actually, we would like to do something, because only together we are strong. And that's really like the mantra of Let's Play for Charity as well.
Okay, fantastic. And let me ask you this. If I would give you money, where does it go? I think that might complete the CTA, right? Because people want to know Absolutely. What your intentions are, your motivations. And maybe after you answer that, in a way, yeah, I want to take a little turn into your personal history, find out a little bit more about you. And I think we will get a good picture, you know, of your motivation, your purpose, your background, and why you do that. And I hope that will give people a good sense of, you know, what they would contribute to if they were to do that. So
for sure.
Now, where would the money go?
So first, it's not about me. It's about the charity. And I live for the charity, but it's not me in the center focus. I'm especially happy to be a front man for this kind of thing. And you can do almost anything with me if this is for a good deeds. But I just do this because I really like to do this. It's my altruism and stuff like that. But the main question about where donations go to, We have made our legal lines that easy that we are quite flexible and can give money or forward money to any other nonprofit entity, no matter if it is a local animal shelter, for example, which you, Simon, would like to do your streaming for, or something else. But of course, we have some main partners, which I would phrase them, meaning entities which we have already been working for, or where we would love to do something with, and we separated them into extreme different branches of charity. As an example, the already known Hilfe im Kampf gegen Krebs e.V., Association Against Cancer, which is dealing a lot of cancer research and stuff like that in Würzburg. They are getting some of the money. The Straßenkinder e.V., the, let's say, kids who don't have a home and are living on the streets. It's a association from Berlin, are our partners. Then we have Brotzeit. It's from Uschi Glas, a very well-known actress from Munich, which is taking care of kids who go to school without having a proper breakfast, especially in poor families. They sometimes don't have the money for a proper breakfast for the underage guys and girls. So they are taking care of that. We give donations to Plan International Germany, which is taking care of kids in third countries where you can have a Patenschaft. We can have something like a fostership or something like that with. Der Weiße Ring, which is known for abused women and children in Germany. The Praxis ohne Grenzen, which is a doctor which is taking care of people who don't have health insurances for people on the streets, for example, to at least make it possible that they can be having a checkup if they have a lung infection or infected food or something like that. And from those donations, they are serving those kind of people. Yeah. And the Vier Pfoten, which means four paws, it's an animal association which is taking care of animals. For example, we recently had a stream for them where we were funding dogs who are taking care of people who are on their final days of living, and they are visiting them in the hospital with the dogs where they can be pet and can give them a little bit like joy and stuff like
joy
that.
Joy and love, what the dogs do. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, so you're basically, you have a bunch of German charities basically that that help people really in Germany, poor people, disadvantaged people. And so you are kind of the gateway to that, you know, if
exactly.
I want to help poor people in Germany, then I donate to Let's Play for Charity. Okay, I think that makes sense. I think that's a conclusive conclusive thing that people can understand. So, well, thank you for doing that. And let me ask you this. And see where we end up. I always like to ask how you grew up, you know, who you are, where you come from, and thereby kind of what motivates you. And I'm curious, where we end up with that. So maybe if we want to go into that, you want to tell a little bit about how you came to be, that would be so interesting to us.
Okay, once upon a time, there was a little boy who grew up in the really center heart of Germany, somewhere between Frankfurt and Cologne, in the Westerwald, and basically a little small village, 5,000 people, where I grew up happily without any disturbance and any distraction from anything like that, because we didn't have so much happening in our small village. And I grew up there making just my local school things, but with 12 years, I was given for Christmas a C64 computer, which was the beginning of the end of Ingo, because I instantly fell in love with that and became a gamer. And in school was known that if you want to do something with that, Ingo knows about that, what you can do with the C64. He has at least some games you can play together, like summer games, winter games, and these kind of things. And I later then updated myself to an Amiga 500, which was the bigger brother of the C64, and same over there. And in parallel, I already made my plans about my later job, because it was quite obvious that I had one skill, that I was quite good in crafting words. So I was considering to be a journalist. And
When did you first consider that? How old were you?
14, 15, yeah. Something like that. Yeah. And therefore, as one of the close friends from my father, of my mother, were actually the editor-in-chief of the local newspaper, the daily newspaper up there. They made it possible that I had had an internship over there during school, and that was not going very, very bad. So they hired me as a freelancer already with 16 years, where I was literally each week crafting the parts for, let's say, the ungrateful things where a normal real editor don't want to go, like the local pigeon tamers, the dog, the 75th birthday here, 80th birthday there. You know what in local newspapers is an important part, because many, many people are reading what is happening with their club and are having a special interest of being once in the papers. So yeah. I was doing all this kind of shitty appointments, but with great joy, because I was earning some good pocket money from that. By traveling over the weekend to 3-4 different appointments, for each appointment, one picture gave me 20 Deutsche Mark, which were printed in the media, plus the article, 10 Deutsche Marks there. So overall, over the weekend, I could earn something like 100 or 200 Deutsche Marks back in this time, which was giving me good pocket money, which I could invest in technique and games. And after finishing, after 13 years, I needed to go to the Bundeswehr, to the German Army Service, where I served my 12 months, which I needed back in this time.
Did you finish? So you said you're finishing after 13 years?
After 13 years, yes, exactly. So Abitur, the German...
Oh yeah, 13 years of school, yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the Bundeswehr with 12 months. Ironically, I was at a tank platoon. So there's a closing circle to today's time.
Oh,
and nice. Driving a tank this time, a Leopard 2. And during the services, I was, of course, consuming my private preferred gaming magazines like PC Player and Power Play back in this time. And in the Power Play, then I saw a small advert that they're looking for some new editors. I was, let's be honest, overmotivated, and wrote something to them and showed them some test articles and so on. And funnily, I have been invited to the first talk with them, with the editor-in-chief back this time. So I drove to Munich and had some talks. And long story short, I got hired by them and had the pleasure to start at the halls of Power Play in Munich to start as being an editor. So I was literally there where I could combine my hobby and where my skill has been back in this time. But as always, when you're young, you don't self-reflect very well. And I was a little bit too over-motivated. So I more or less was the first person who was dismissed after they had to cut down the editorial team after some short time. But
What happened there? What do you mean? Did you go on their nerves or something?
No, it was more like something. I'm the most important person and everybody was only waiting for me. So I behaved a little bit too much like I have been a senior back this time. So they do not take me so full. And that was basically the issue back in this time.
Right,
so
I understand. Yeah.
Things you need to pay for if you're a young guy and overmotivated. Yeah. But the good thing was that back in this time, I wrote the main test for Battle Isle 3 from Blue Byte back this time. It was, I think, a 6 or 7 page article, of course, a well-known German game. And I had a very good relation to the PR manager of Blue Byte back in this time. And after she got to know that I was leaving Power Play, she was talking to me and asking if I could or would like to freelance for Blue Byte, because she liked my style, my right of styling. my style of writing. So, so it turns out that I started to study Germanism, and in parallel, I was a freelancer for Blue Byte, writing backpack stories, manuals, and stuff like that for several of the Blue Byte games, and was making good money, which I could use as a young student. And I thought, okay, I applied for some other publishers offering my freelance services because it's fun and I could make even more money out of that. And then it turns out that one of the companies, meaning Bomiko, which was a very big publisher from the Frankfurt area, which is today Namco Bandai, or Bandai Namco, and they were answering me that they're not looking for freelancers, but they are looking for fixed hires. And studies were not my piece of cake because too much theory, less practic. And yeah. Interfered my studies and was successfully getting away from that and started as a junior product manager together with another product manager working on some games, mostly as I was a junior on smaller games like Industry Giant and things like that. And after 3 months of actually doing some good job on in there, our PR manager, which was only one PR lady at Bomiko, had a severe health issues and stopped working from one day to the other, and we didn't have any PR person there. So what our boss made in this time, looking around which are the boys and girls with the biggest mouths, it turned out that Ingo was one of them. So yeah. Two people have been more or less instantly thrown into the cold waters of, yeah, you do now PR. You're not doing any more product management. You know, do PR. So that was the birth of Ingo as a PR manager back in this time. And thankfully, it was an extremely rewarding and nice work relation. We had extremely nice products back in this time. So it made it easy for us to get along and get introduced to media, visiting PC games and Computec, for example, back in this time, IDG and all those big publishing houses. And because we had so many titles over the year, we had something like 20 SKUs, meaning different titles for different platforms. It was the glorious time of Game Boy and stuff and Super Nintendo. Nice. So you could imagine that there was quite a big lineup of more or less BC titles and only some A titles.
Much to do.
And exactly.
If I may interrupt you, I want to bring it back a little bit because I was thinking about young people, you know, and I know you care about youngsters and students. And if we talk about the time where, you know, you kind of realized that, you know, I'm a wordsmith, I'm a storyteller. Mm-hmm. And now you're kind of bringing that circle there that, well, then you became a PR person naturally. What, and also maybe connecting it to the beginning of our conversation today, about PR today, you know, today, well, how did you recognize that that's what you were good at? And then how, well, maybe somebody can, you know, recognize that in themselves. And what would you suggest people, youngsters, students, 16-year-olds, whatever, consider themselves writers or wordsmiths or storytellers. And then maybe also getting into games PR. How does all that fit together? What would your story be there?
Well, for me, it was really like being at the right time at the right place, having a little bit luck here, have some right connections over there. And in the end, it turned out on several occasions that everything will be good in the end and everything will be all right. But for people who are willing to join or are dreaming about a job in the industry, of course, today there are a lot of other opportunities, several opportunities like being educated at School for Games, Games Academy, and doing studies in these kind of things, as there are several jobs which are extremely helpful if you first learn your basics and stuff like that. In PR, of course, it's a little bit different, as you need to have a natural talent. You cannot really, of course, you can learn how to talk properly and how to talk freely, but still it needs to be your natural me. And I'm a talkative person. If people meet me and I can talk with anybody, no matter if it was a school newspaper who were knocking with pumping heart to our doors at Gamescom and trying to talk to somebody from Wargaming. I talked to those people in the same way like I was talking to an editor-in-chief of Spiegel or something, like renowned magazines and high-tier magazines and stuff like that. Because in the end, on the other side, there's a human being sitting. And I think this makes PR really special. You need to have an empathy for the opposite person. You need to really be able to rely on your vibes. Of course, the product plays a big, big part here as well. You cannot sell shit until it is gold. So once again, you need to be credible, which is really, from my perspective, the most important thing in our industry or in any PR manager job, because otherwise you are just a hot steam maker and everybody knows you're talking only shit and nice buzzwords and there's nothing behind this. There are a lot of people of this, of course.
And how did you recognize back in the day that you could be a writer or something? Because you were obviously very confident in that. And I think it's something that many people are like, ooh, you know, I'm not sure if I can be that or something. So what was the process in your head then?
It was really the opportunity to be 14 days at this newspaper to learn how it is really going, how they are doing it to really produce a newspaper on a daily basis. And I really got a lot of enthusiasm and joy from this, especially as the editors over there were not treating me like the typical intern you consider. I mean, when you're doing with 15 or 16 years, these 2-week internships in local companies, mostly because you have to do it. So you just look for opportunities. But I had the pleasure that I actually got into something which was really fitting to me and was interesting for me. So the editors and the workers which hired me for this internship or gave me the opportunity for this internship really took care of me. They were really like fostering me in a way that I feel very, very interested, motivated, and hooked to the things. And I think this is some hint which I would give to everyone. Try to get as much experience in the branches where you consider that this is interesting for you, no matter if you would like to be a firefighter, policeman, rocket science manager, or a stock exchange trader or something like that. Try to at least be able to sniff a little bit around, breathe the air, talk to veterans of the industry of that particular branch which you are interested in, and you will get to know quite fast if this really is this illusion of your dream career in this or in that industry, where the reality might be completely different and you are disillusionized completely because it's not this candy like you imagine it would be. And then you will really, really fast get to know and get to learn if this is really this thing which you would like to continue on this path to sometimes reach this, or if you better try something else and successively being able to find the thing which you personally enjoy most. Because I think this is a phrase which in German works best. It doesn't work in English, but Beruf kommt von Berufung. So it's like your job is really calling for you and where you feel most safe with. Of course, you can be in a job where you just do your job, but then it's a 9-to-5 job and you feel after several years shitty about this. And I have the pleasure that I made my hobby to my really profession. And so now with 48 years since last Monday, I still every day go with a big smile to my job and still enjoy what I actually can do.
Happy late birthday, man. And you got to test it and you got to listen to the call. It has to call you. That's true. That is true. And so tell me maybe one more thing before we maybe begin wrapping up. What brought you? You told us the story that you went into charity because you were considering this talk at Quo Vadis, and there were some people who needed help. What in you has this? And now it's like the big thing you're doing, right? The thing that's really important to you. What's that about helping people? You know, some people do that. Not everybody does that. How does that fit into there? Did you have an experience where you needed help and you got it or you didn't get it? Or is it something else? How did that come about? What's your motivation?
My motivation really was trying out or being more like an empathic person, an altruistic person, and so on, that I developed this mindset after I went through some really personal, severe things where I was really like a complete different person. I was very selfish, very ego, only considering me and myself. I told you the story on the power play and stuff like that. And I completely changed due to that I was really... The floor under me was disappearing. I was self-employed back in 2009. We had a lot of money invested into an own production of an own game and so on. And I made the mistake that I personally signed as well on some debt with a bank. So we got some money so we can make some promotion on the game and find a publisher and stuff like that. And long story short, we had an LOE. So some publisher was about to sign our game, so we knew everything will be all right and stuff like that. And suddenly, 1 week before we could sign this kind of contract, our developer told us that they sold themselves to another publisher. So we couldn't finish our game, so all those big money which was at stake disappeared from one second to the other.
Wow.
And after that, I realized after some month that this debt which our company had, I had to pay for it because I was a stupid, egoistic person and was not reading a contract quite properly. Mm. And I had to, Mithaftung in Germany, once again, a word which I not claim in English, but which leads to the fact that I was close to be claiming insolvency of my own, private insolvency.
Privately.
Meaning 5-6 years of close to no money and giving everything to the banks, which of course is obvious. They need their money back, fair enough. And that changed something in me. I cannot really leverage if that was one from 1 second to the other, but that was definitely like a starting shot if you're on a 100 meter race, and I heard the shot. And after that, I became much more relaxed. I became much more smooth, fairer to partners, listening to others' demands and needs. So this was shape-shifting me a little bit or a little bit more. And that climax was then in 2013 that I heard about these things in my bubble, that others had much more severe problems than I had. I was only worrying about the money while others were worrying about life of their kids, life of their wives and stuff like this.
Right.
And that was more or less where the Ingo of today was evolving.
Yeah, when you get the rug pulled from under you, that's really something that can really change a person.
Yeah, for me, it was luckily in a positive way. Others still lay down and are desperate and cannot move and are immobilized from themselves. And thankfully, I shift-shaped to a rather better me than I was.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And it's good that manifests in the real world too. And thank you for telling this, right? This is a relatively uncomfortable story. And
I wouldn't say it's uncomfortable because it's a part of me and it's a positive story to tell, which potentially brings others to avoid these kind of things and not being selfish, not being egoistic, not being super, super self-confident without facing the reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, either keeps them from it or helps them recognize when it's time, you know? And I think these types of stories are often behind something like what you're doing now. So I was wondering if there was something. So thank you for sharing that. And I think it's just very meaningful to hear that because it isn't all just, you know, sunshine and rainbows and unicorns.
There is more. There is more than that. And even more than just a job. That is what always everybody needs to take into account. You can always, especially now in pandemic situation due to COVID, there could be really like a big pile of coming to you and you need to get through really, really, really bad things. And then you can be happy if you have friends or entities like Gaming Aid, entities like Platzware for Charity or any other which is trying to support you. And you just need to be proud, not proud enough to deny this kind of thing, but be open because there are people who might be able to help you.
And you got the Cross of Merit for that. I guess I wanted to ask what that means to you, because it's like a pretty high honor from the state. You know, I don't know anybody else who's got that. So what's up with that?
Honestly, our PR person who was responsible for Let's Play for Charity, of course, got to me and said, wow, that's a really big thing, especially as we don't know anybody else from the gaming industry who got this kind of thing. But it's I don't take this as a personal reward, although it is only for individuals, so it cannot be given to an entity. Therefore, I am the one who were granted this kind of thing. But I take this more or less as a reward for the work of so many helping hands all over the years, no matter if it was with Gaming Aid, no matter if it was with Let's Play for Charity or any other aspect. And so I only, as a representative of those many helping hands, was receiving this. I do not grow from this 1 centimeter bigger or be a little bit more proud of myself. Because in the end, I do things which I enjoy to do. And if I get a reward for that, no matter if it is a bonus for my company or if it is a out of merit, it's a reward for what I'm doing and what I'm enjoying. So I take this as this, that it is a reward and a respectful consideration by others, because there I still don't know who applied me to this out of merit, because somebody needs to write a letter to the local mayor and stuff like that. And I would like to nominate Simon for the Order of Merit. And then there's a background check on you and some other people will be asked.
Oops, he didn't reply to his emails. Can't get the Order of Merit.
Something like this. And so not a lot of people really get this kind of thing. Even I nominated already a few people and got some letter back that after some checking, we decided not to follow up on this. So I recognize that this is something really unique and special. But I am no longer this self-ego guy who is getting 10 centimeters bigger because of that. And I wouldn't even mind if I wouldn't have had this. But I, of course, recognize that this is extreme valuable for the charities I have been working for or I am working for, because this is showing respect and it's an honor for the charity, because it's, as I said, it's a reward. And for new people, if you are now standing in deciding should I work with charity A or B, then of course a charity where the chairman have received the Order of Merit is a little bit more trustworthy than potentially somebody else you don't know. So this is helping to open some doors. This is helping to talk to people. This might have to do as well with the fact that I have the honor to be a part of the judges from the German Computer Game Award. But overall, I don't wear this medal when I'm meeting people at Gamescom. I do not brag about this. I wouldn't be even so hard to say, I don't really care if I would have it or don't have it. Well, of course I use it.
Of course, and in, yeah, exactly. And I think in the press releases about it, I mean, it was one could see that you were really thanking your team, and it's for you and your team, right? And everybody who helped. And it's
that's my mantra. Together we are strong.
I think
together we are strong. I am nothing, and alone I would never be able to build any of these kind of events, charities, streams, and whatsoever. It's always something which I align with other people who are infected with the charity virus. Therefore, I cannot say often enough thank you to Tassin Afci from Hamburg, who started Gaming Aid with me as the vice president, no matter if it is Dennis Hanson and Jörn Lawyer, who are currently my brothers-in-law for Let's Play for Charity in the lead of the association. But really, I don't see that I am Mr. Charity. It's so many people. Maybe I am better to be put in the spotlight because I am willing and able to talk for hours like we do in here. And others just
too, right?
And others are more preferring to doing it in the silent and in the back. But everybody is more than welcome to participate in our charities. And that's more or less the spirit and the seed I would like to give and hope that the big, nice, stable plant comes out of that.
Fantastic, man. Love to hear it. I think it's the way to go. And thank you for that. Beautiful note to end this regularly scheduled program on. And we here at GamesNet Berlin Europe Podcast have a couple of quickfire questions or essential questions that we like to ask. So that's kind of what we want to end on today. And a little challenge for you, the talkative man. We'll keep it quick.
I try.
And short questions. They're not necessarily simple, but let's see if we can get some pointy answers here. Are you ready?
No.
Was the first one you passed.
Yeah.
Short enough? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I have some flow, some let's go. So my first question is always, what would you say is the purpose of your being?
Oh my God. I think learn and teach in the same way. Sharing is caring and value the qualities of life. So beside my main mantra, which I already said, like together we are strong.
Very nice. Second one, what inspires you?
Altruism. So altruistic mindsets from leaders, no matter of what sex, color, orientation, religion, and money, who are just doing something which humans should do as beings on our planet. Reunite and not compete.
Nice. What's a beautiful day for you?
Normally a day where I can sleep out a little bit longer. Maybe a day like today when we have blue sky and no hurting bones and muscles as I'm turning 50 in some years. So this is something, a nice breakfast with my loved ones. Maybe if it is a work day, a mailbox, which is not too much filled, especially with unimportant nonsense mail. And yeah, but basically that I'm able to clear the list for my day and have some good kickoff meetings with a happy team, collaborating with nice people just like here, so I can still enjoy my work day.
Yes. Number four, what's the change that you want to see in the world?
I mean, we should consider we only have one planet where we are living on. So it would be great if everybody would treat each and everyone like you are a friend. No borders, no barrier, no better or unworthy thinking or something like this. And that's something which I'm really missing, especially in modern times, that it's a lot of competition. I am better. I have strength and weaknesses, and weakness is bad, strength is good, and something like that. So I would really love if we all, as human beings, would take care more of our environment, global warming as a hot buzzword or something like that, and move closer to each other.
And how do you contribute to that change that you want to see?
I think I already talked about this, that I changed from a rather idiotic, ego-driven person, was only looking for my own benefit, no matter if it is money, acknowledgement, fame, or whatsoever, and giving a shit about others, people's feeling and stuff like that. But now I really enjoy meeting any human being, trying to get the max out of this meeting, no matter if it's a young, old, experienced, unexperienced person and so on. We can really learn a lot from each other. And on the other hand, of course, due to my mainly charity activities, I always try to inflict others with this altruistic virus. And I'm happy that it already was working with a lot of people. Some of them are still working with me, some are doing others. And I really like this. And the joy and satisfaction to help people in need is really something which is giving me great, great pleasure. And I think this is a good contribution as well.
Nice. Yeah, and sometimes the change we want to see comes from inside or starts there, you know. It's not always the things on the outside. That's good. New question in this lineup. If you would start a new save game in your life now, what occupation would your new character have?
So RPG game, re-rolling my character settings.
I would say so, yeah.
I'm pretty happy with my current settings. As I said, after this ship shifting of myself, So I would maybe only change some younger me to an even more and to be earlier and even more open and curious person who do not only want to fit into the mindset and ideas of, for example, be the perfect son, be the perfect daughter, and fulfill your daddy's dreams and what your family wants you to be, but even more be true to yourself. So I would teach my younger me to listen less to other people, you should be this, or more to say, I would like to do that.
Nice. Last question from me. Do you have books that you often recommend or that have changed your life or that you like to give to people? One, two, three, maybe?
Especially in today's times, of course, it's an interesting question because less and less people are reading books. So maybe sometimes
on them.
Sometimes me maybe giving books is something a little bit offensive.
imagine. Like, oh my God, Ingo, I can't believe you gave me a book. How dare you?
Exactly. You stupid a-hole. Why did you give me this book of being a sympathetic person? So therefore, of course, you need to really consider this well, if it's a fit or not. But I personally often read biographies of people. So no matter if it's current people like Angela Merkel or Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, but as well older ones like Gandhi, Helmut Schmidt, and so on, which I really like to at least propose to others because there are some interesting learnings, for example, from that. But on the other hand, it's more something like a distraction from daily life, fantasy books like Song of Wind, Ice and Fire, The Dwarfs from Marcus Heinz, or something like that, where you can go into other completely different worlds and be distracted a little bit from that. And
do you have a favorite one that stands out that you would like to champion?
I'm really a big fan of Marcus Heinz. So The Dwarfs books, all of them are very, very hard to read on the first hand to get used to all these names, but I think this is the same from R. R. Martin with The Song of Ice, Wind and Fire, or Game of Thrones, which is called the series, where you need to get used to all these names and people, as there are hundreds of people in theirs, and it's not so much different with The Dwarves, but I like the lore which Marcus Heinz was creating, which is not trying to be so much different from the Lord of the Rings or Baldur's Gate games, RPG games, or something like that. But it goes much more into depth, and you get some sympathy or antipathy for some of the characters inside, and that's why I really like this. And maybe as a third one, it's always nice to read things which introduce you and learn you some new basic skills in areas where you're potentially not even familiar with. And for me, for example, it was like getting a little bit more background about what blockchain, crypto industry, and stuff like that is. So I'm curious about the evolution of this and how rapid the things are evolving, but not necessarily as strong to be part of that or something. So it's basically to have some basic knowledge of many things wouldn't hurt.
Mm-hmm. So I jump in here. And my question also is about a small list, which is, what are your favorite games? Also, one, two, three.
That I changed in my life, because I clearly switched from stressful competitive games to rather relaxing games. So I personally enjoy that branch, what I call aquarium and building games, which I claim like City Skylines, Transport Fevers, or 4X games like Master of Orion, Civilization, or XCOM. But I must admit that I'm a big Diablo fan as well, since it came out first. So I still enjoy when a new season on Diablo 3 comes out already. It's an old game. I bought the game instantly when the latest remake was coming. I'm waiting for the mobile game and, of course, for Diablo 4. So that, of course, is what I personally enjoy. But beside that, and that's a learning for PR-interested persons as well, of course, you need to play most current games as well from time to time. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to make credible PR for a title if you don't know the competition and would not be able to say anything about the competition from firsthand.
Mm-hmm. Then also a new question. Who is somebody from the games industry who you would like to get to know?
Okay, due to the fact that I've been on many game shows, E3s and GDCs and stuff like that, I already had the pleasure to run into some interesting people like Sid Meier or Peter Molyneux, for example. But what I really like to meet would be some current decision makers, especially due to the Activision Microsoft deal. I would love to talk to Phil Spencer, for example, or somebody who was selling his company and build it from scratch, like Marcus Persson from aka Notch from Minecraft. That would be interesting. And if you're saying some historic person or person in general, really like the big statesmen and people who changed a lot in their countries, like Mahatma Gandhi, for example. But I think it's rather more realistic to meet Phil Spencer or Marcus Persson.
That is actually good, because this question has a trapdoor card just activated for the first time on this podcast as well, which we thought it would be very funny to ask that question and then say, since GameSnet Berlin Europe is a networking project, and mm-hmm. this, we will have a small challenge. No matter what you will answer, we will actually try to somehow reach out to those people or to that person.
Okay.
And figure out a way to get you connected. So I see a better chance of reaching Notch and Mahatma Gandhi.
Okay. So challenge taken, but I think therefore would be more some closer contacts where even people like me would be able to introduce you to it would be easier.
No, I mean, we are trying to connect you.
Okay.
The challenge is for us.
Okay, so I'm waiting for the invite and for my beer with Marcus.
Exactly. Let's get this going. I can see a bright future ahead of this podcast. Yes, but now here comes your task or your question the other way around. Who is someone you know you think should be on this podcast with us?
That's an interesting question, actually. I think we talked about these buying and investment and stuff like that. So maybe it would be a good idea to talk to people who just have been signing up for the Bundesförderung for the German government, the funding. Mm-hmm. And because I'm as well a big fan of the Dune series, no matter if it was the RTS game earlier or the books. Maybe someone from the Funcom, or in this case, I think it's the Nuclear guys from Hannover. Mm-hmm. Maybe Kirk Lenke, the CEO from them, might be an interesting person to talk a little bit how it is, especially as the German developers are not so internationally successful as others, to get such a big license and as well funding, of course, how this process was, if he has 10 more gray hairs or something like that. Or two others, which I might phrase, would be Chris Hülsbeck, a German sound artist known for his C64 and Amiga history, who is living in the US, but could tell some stories about being a sound artist in the industry, early days and now. And as a third one, potentially Stefan Marcinek, who just resigned from being one of the Gameverband people. He's the head of Ensemble, a publisher, I think, in Wiesbaden. Mm-hmm. And they have been able, besides he's a very, very cool guy and funny guy, so you would have a lot of laughs with him most likely. But as well, he can talk a lot of, because he built up Calypso, for example, and now has been building up Ensemble as a publisher since a few years with very, very good results. So from this perspective, that might be really, really interesting to talk to them.
All right. So we're getting a bucket list of guests to potentially invite to this podcast.
This is good. I'm excited. You know, this is a newly designed question. This is good. I'm so curious now. Thank you for the recommendation.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And lastly, you said a few of those things, but let's have them compact in one go. Where can people find you and your charity? And like, how do people find you on the internet and could get in touch?
For real or digitally?
Digitally.
Because that's of course.
Don't dox yourself, please.
Yeah, don't dox yourself, man. We've had this. No addresses. No, here you can find me here. No, on the internet.
Please. Well, smart people will be able to find this as the charity is my home address.
Oh, no!
Cut!
No.
No, but for real, I mean, I already was talking about this. So let's play number 4, charity.com is the domain of the charity where you can find basically all documents if you would like to sign up for a membership or find our social media, as we are literally on most of the social media platforms, of course. If you're more into watching us, it would be twitch.tv/LP4charity as a shortcut. And of course, LinkedIn and Xing, just look for Ingo Horn and you most likely will see one of those guys who is wearing a t-shirt with looks like gaming and not being a lawyer. That would be me then most likely. And I think you will be linking these kind of things as well in the podcast section of your website, right?
Yes, of course.
That's correct.
My pleasure.
That's correct.
Thank you very much, Ingo.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Thanks for your stories. Thanks for sharing what drives you and motivates you. And thanks for doing what you do and for talking to us.
With pleasures. And looking forward for your applications then to our charity soon, yeah?
What have we gotten ourselves into?
You won't regret it later.
All right. Well, see you around, hopefully in real life soon. And until then, goodbye.
Thank you very much, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi there. Simon here. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear here and you would like to hear more here, feel free to follow or to subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you get your audio fix. We appreciate you and we promise you to bring you many more insightful conversations with fantastic games industry guests from Berlin and from all over Europe. Thank you very much and see you very soon. Bye bye.
Hi there. Before you go, this is Florian, project manager for GamesNet Berlin Europe. If you want to stay connected to the network, find out more about upcoming events and links to other MediaNet initiatives, you can visit us at gamesnetberlin.eu and subscribe to our newsletter. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, and until next time.